Season 2, Episode 14. Today we are continuing our Lessons from the Wilderness series with a look at facing our giants. Hello, Father.
Hello, daughter. Here we are again.
It's so good to be with you on a beautiful day. And I always love to talk to you. Today, our icebreaker. Are you ready?
All right. Okay. Let's break some ice.
Do you prefer to listen to instrumental or vocal music?
Yeah, that's a good question. Usually vocal. I mean, I listen to instrumental like when I'm studying or something, but most of the time vocal. Yeah. Mm-hmm. How about you?
Yeah, same. I enjoy instrumental for sure, but I've noticed that even when I'm writing, I almost, if it's too instrumental, it'll distract me. I actually need kind of the consistency of the vocal to drown out, which I might be weird for saying, but I will say my favorite sort of instrumental is the kind with a really strong violin in it. It sounds epic.
So yeah. I would make sense. Yeah. That would be you like epic violin music.
I like both, but yes, I tend to lean toward something that has a vocal lead to it. All right, there we go. Ice broken. So we all have battles to face on our journey, and a lot of times, especially on the healing journey, and if we are facing something that we feel like is a battle, it's usually because it feels like it's bigger than us. And so I'll use that to segue into today. We're talking about Moses and the giants. And, you know, we usually talk about David and Goliath, but Moses and giants?
Moses and the giants.
What is
it? It's the original, right? So it's a old BC rock group, Moses and the Giants. No, it's So between the wilderness wanderings where they're there for 38 years, and then what happens is the Israelites leave camp and they start going around Edom and into the plains of Moab. And to the north of Moab, there are two kingdoms. And these two kingdoms, the text goes out of its way on multiple occasions to let us know that there were giants in the land and that these giants are given names like Zumamim and Raphaim and Anakim, right? And it's not the Im that makes them giants, but it's like there are a lot of giants in the land. And it was these giants that they were afraid of facing. You know, when the spies first sent in their, when the spies first gave their report, they're like, we can't take on these giants. So Moses, actually, while he's still their leader, they fight two giant kings, and there are probably other giants in there as well. And they are known as Sihon and Og. And one of them is famous for the fact that he had an enormous bed, right, made out of iron. And what they found out through archaeology since then is that his bed is actually the exact same dimensions as an altar to Marduk, the god of Babylon. And it gets into a whole lot of speculative kind of, well, are these people related to the Nephilim? What does this look like? Who are the Rephaim? How do all these things connect? And if you want all that, you go to Dr. Michael Heiser. He'll give you all that you want of that. But but these are the giants, right, that Moses is taking on.
Yeah. Do you want to say anything more about Nephilim? I know you like, we don't have to. We can just direct people to Heiser.
But. Yeah, no, they can look it up on their own. Nephilim, we don't have time for it.
Okay, cool. So yes, God is giving them object lessons of literal giants. And also, I'm going to pull out from Deuteronomy 3:21-22 what they say. God says, and I commanded Joshua at that time, or Moses says, and I commanded Joshua at that time, your eyes have seen all that the Lord your God has done to these two kings. So will the Lord do to all the kingdoms into which you are crossing. You shall not fear them, for it is the Lord your God who fights for you. And you opened your mouth. Do you have...
Well, I was about to say something, realized I should wait for you to ask a question, but I have a... No, it's... yeah, we have multiple things coming out here. First of all... Again, the big scary thing that kept the people out of the land in the first place was these giants. And so God's going to have Moses fight the first two, so to speak, and Joshua will be his assistant, and he'll watch and he'll learn. So we're seeing this succession, leadership succession thing happening. And I think you were pointing out there's this mirror neuron thing going on brain science wise, where I've seen this before. I know what this looks like. And it helps you not be quite as afraid of it. So when Joshua is then going to lead them into the land and they're going to take on the giants in the land, he's at least already experienced and seen what it looks like for God to come through and defeat an army that's got giants in it.
Yeah, he's learning by example. I've done this. You've done it with me when, you know, Moses is the bigger brain and not the giant.
Yeah, well, that's why I was asking before. Is a giant by definition have a bigger brain? But no, we were...
Okay, well, it's actually been a while since we talked like brain science here. Do you want to pause and kind of give simple definitions?
Yeah. So the idea of Dr. Wilder talks about having that... For little children to grow and develop maturity, they need to be around a bigger brain. But the meaning of that is not a smarter person, but somebody who is not overwhelmed by things. So classic example would be lightning, thunder, lightning, storm, and a little kid scared to death. And when a little kid comes to mommy and daddy, they're not coming so they can get a meteorological explanation of what's going on outside, right? They're coming to somebody who is not overwhelmed by this, who can actually be a calming presence and have the bigger brain, the more developed brain. And so all of us, when we get overwhelmed emotionally, when we get overwhelmed in life, we all need that bigger brain person to turn to who can help us kind of stabilize our own emotions. And we see this in the scripture repeatedly with the idea that God says to us over and over again, I am with you. And that I am with you idea is that God is always the bigger brain for us to help us to find shalom in our overwhelm. So in this case, what we're looking at here is that, you know, giants obviously are not bringing shalom to people by their bigger brains. What we're talking about here is more of that Joshua's had a chance to see Moses not be overwhelmed by this, to see Moses trust God, to see what happened. And now he's got a model in his brain he can follow when he goes into the promised land.
Yeah. And I think even beyond Joshua, the people get to see, you know, the people say, ah, Moses did this and we were fine. So maybe with Joshua, we'll be fine. And also, I just wanted to give a little anecdote. It reminds me of growing up, one of my favorite math classes, which I don't say very often, I'm not a math person, but it was a good math class. And my teacher, she would give us what she called candy problems. And the candy problem was the most difficult question, like the most difficult problem to solve from whatever lesson that we were in. We would learn the lesson in class, we would go through things, and then we would get our candy problem, the most difficult thing. And if we solved it, she would give us a piece of candy. But then also the point was, okay, now go home. Anything in your homework that you face is not going to be as difficult as what you just successfully faced. And so we learned from our candy problems. Okay,
well, that's good.
I could do this big thing, so I can do the next thing and not have anxiety about it. So
I like it. It's yeah, Moses solved the candy problem here. Yeah. God gave him here. No, that's good. And literally, this was, they're facing armies that were considered unbeatable. Mm-hmm. And with the kings who were very impressive. And so when Moses led the people in victory over these kings, it brought terror to the people of Canaan. Right, because it's like, wait a second, how did this happen? I will also say, if we're going to get into the weeds on something too, just the sheer numbers of the people in the book, I'm an advocate of the idea that word that's translated thousands in Hebrew doesn't mean thousands, mm-hmm. that it should have a different translation. Something more along the lines of groups.
Mm-hmm. Like and musters or...
Like, yeah, clusters of people or musters or, you know, units of people. And that changes everything. Because let's face it, if there were actually 603,000, you know, Israelite warriors, as opposed to, say, 603 units of Israelite warriors, that's a very different thing. If there are 603,000 of them, they would have could have overwhelmed everybody because there was no one in those days that had that kind of numbers. They would have outnumbered all the inhabitants of the land combined. So I don't think that this image we've had of 2 million people leaving Egypt and all this, I think is actually based on a bad translation. So that's my take. That's my in the weeds. Now people, you know, who don't like that can let me know, but that there it was.
Thank you. So in your new book, Breakthrough, you also make a point to you emphasize, a lot of people don't on first blush don't like the name of your new book, Breakthrough, because they're like, no, you can't have just, you know, too many people are just looking for the breakthrough. But your point with it is that actually we need multiple breakthroughs. We're looking for breakthroughs in along the journey in multiple areas. And I promise this is related to the battles we face here. So through our healing journey and through our journey of life, we are going to face multiple battles and need multiple breakthroughs. And we're going to have different levels of giants or armies that we are facing, so to speak. And how do you see that playing out in this narrative and applications?
Well, I think that in the same way that the Israelites were on a journey, but they had a lot of tests, a lot of battles. In other words, not everything's a battle. You know, when you wake up in the morning and it's manna again, right? And it's, you know, hot again. It's not really a battle, but it is. There are things that you overcome along the way. And I think that what happens is that you can have these little breakthroughs all along the way. And some of them are bigger breakthroughs. So when they had to defeat the Amalekites who were attacking them, the victory in that battle can be thought of as a breakthrough. If they don't get that breakthrough, the rest of the journey doesn't happen. So I look at a journey as having hundreds of breakthrough moments in it, where we face something that if we don't overcome this, we're going to stay stuck. Overcoming it doesn't mean it's the end of the journey. It doesn't mean I'm done, but I am now able to move forward again. And I think there's a lot of us that we get stuck over and over and over again. And we think, well, I thought I had my breakthrough. Why am I getting stuck again? It's like, no, you just got to have another breakthrough here because this is now probably something else that's getting you stuck.
Mm-hmm. And there can be levels of break. Like sometimes there's a breakthrough that happens that does it. There's a pivot there that's bigger, but sometimes it's kind of like little cross moments and big cross moments.
Yeah. Cause there were like, for example, really big breakthrough moments in the story is leaving Egypt is a big breakthrough moment, right? Leaving the wilderness and starting to go around Moab, big breakthrough moment. You know, crossing the Jordan River, you know, conquering Jericho. These are big breakthrough moments. Then there are all these little ones along the way that are also important, like, because if those don't happen, we don't get to the other things. And so I do think that there are little breakthroughs and big breakthroughs, and there are stages and levels. And one of the mistakes a lot of us make is this feeling like, I just want to have that one big moment. And I'll be honest, people like me can perpetuate the problem because we tell these stories about someone who came to see us and we had one session of inner healing prayer with them and boom, they went on their way happy, you know, or we came and we walked them through a deliverance session or something and all of a sudden, you know, their compulsion went away and everything was better. And it leaves people thinking like, well, why doesn't that happen to me? Why don't I have one session with somebody and all of a sudden I'm zapped and the breakthrough happens. So that's what we're trying to temper, is the expectation that that's how it all works.
Well, and I would even just contextualize stories like that, because those are still depicting a, you know, that might have been a bigger breakthrough for someone that solved a lot of the issues, but that doesn't mean now they go off and they have perfect peace and maturity and harmony and, you know, and all the things that in all their life. But that area, there was a breakthrough.
Well,
that
I'll give you a classic example of it. It's like I met with a guy several years ago who was having a pornography problem. And he got significant breakthrough moment related to early childhood sexual trauma where Jesus met him and he had this amazing experience with Jesus. He identified and got rid of very tangible demons that were related to this. And all that happened in one session. But a year later, he still had a pornography problem, right? In other words, the breakthrough there wasn't the whole breakthrough for everything that he needed because he was kind of relying on that, okay, I am fixed now idea and so he didn't do all the other things that you've got to do to walk in freedom and to grow in maturity.
So that area, kind of like when we're building our joy pathways from different negative emotions, where you could get a breakthrough, or you know, you could develop the skills to return to joy from shame, but you're still struggling with anger.
So defeating a giant doesn't necessarily, you know, defeating a giant's important. You've got to win that battle with that giant to keep moving forward. But in and of itself, it doesn't build the whole pathway, right? Mm-hmm. In your brain, it doesn't. In the same way here, it wasn't everything that they needed. After beating that giant, they were still going to have to go into the land, and there were other things that were going to have to happen. And so, yeah, that's kind of where we're getting at here with the story of Moses and the giants, is this idea that all of us have giants to face, and that's a metaphor for anything that is bigger than us, is overwhelming to us, is makes us feel like I can't beat this in my own strength. And being around people who walk you through that, or seeing other people who get victory over those things, you know, that's what we mean by the bigger brain. That's what we mean by people actually feeling like, okay, I've seen it. I know that I can handle this. And I experienced that myself in getting trained in spiritual warfare things. I not only sat in with my parents, but I got to see other people do this as well. When I was teaching Old Testament at Bethel, I was what occasionally take students to go see some experienced people in the spiritual warfare area. And so I got to watch several different people do it. And one of the things that it did for me is I got to watch a lot of different people stay very calm, you know, not raise their voice, not yell and scream, you know, and walk people through the basics, but stay in control, remain, you know, the person who is in charge of what's going on here, and not get rattled. And it sticks with you because your brain sees that and you go, okay, that's how you do it. I don't come in here and I don't shout and scream and spit. You know, I,
maybe overlapping, but I was just like, oh, rare spiritual warfare, R-A-R-E.
Anyway. Yeah. So it's, that all is part of it.
So we haven't talked about rare leadership on here a lot. Let's remain relational, act like yourself, return to joy, and endure hardship well. Another Marcus Warner acrostic for you. So as we were looking at this, we also were looking at how the battles that we fight are often multi-generational. And we see that in this story, we have the generation that came from Egypt, and we're coming into the generation that is going to take the promised land. And do you want to talk any about that?
Well, I do think that that's not uncommon. We hear a lot in spiritual warfare circles about generational iniquity or generational curses, and how the sins of the fathers can open doors for things to affect. So we're familiar with that concept, that there can be generational negative consequences moving forward. But there can also be battles within families that take generations for breakthrough. In other words, there are family-level breakthroughs and culture-level breakthroughs that are generally multi-generational. If I'm talking about my own personal emotional thing, that's not a multi-generational battle. But when I'm talking about the redemption of a culture, or the redemption of a family, and the transformation of that, those things are often multi-generational, and God will have different specific things that he wants to accomplish in each generation towards his ultimate goal that he's after.
Mm-hmm. We're going to talk a little bit more about that next episode with the transition of leadership from Moses to Joshua. But I know you've said, regardless of the generation we find ourselves in, we can be the light in the darkness, or we can be part of the generation that does something amazing. And there's room for either thing. So there doesn't have to be hopelessness if you are in a generation of darkness. You can still be
a
light.
No, absolutely. Because, you know, some people are called to be that one person standing again, you know, swimming against the tide, standing up in the midst of all of it. And there's other people who are part of a generation of moving forward. I think the illustration I used explaining this to you earlier was my youth group experience, and that is watching my older siblings go through a very dead youth group where there was just not a lot of life in it. And, you know, it was, and I didn't see a lot of joy, you know, in going to youth group. And the, in fact, a lot of the people in the youth group were kind of known for being worldly and rebellious. By the time I got to the same church's youth group, the culture was changing and the culture of the youth group was changing. And one of the reasons was there were several of us who were natural leaders who were coming into the group. And when the student leadership of the group was actually excited about God and was actually, setting the tone, like, this is important, we're excited about this, you could begin to see things change. By the time I was done with that experience, our group had grown from like 30 to 130. It had, the 30 is the magic number here, right? We had probably over 30 people from that group going to full-time Christian service. And so I got to be a part of like a generation where it was a breakthrough thing for the church. Now, I got to say, a generation later, that church hit really hard times. I mean, the pastor had an affair. A couple of other pastors had affairs. It was a bad thing. But the group of us that went through that together, even 30 years later, were like, oh, let's have a reunion. Let's get back together, because there was just so much joy during that season that we were together. Whereas other people have had to be like, no, I'm the light in this darkness. These other people don't seem interested in it. But God has a different calling for that person than they would for someone like me.
Yeah. Thank you for that anecdote and for sharing from your personal story. I have an announcement here. It is a fun and exciting announcement. Do you wish you could meet in person with other people over Deeper Walk content? Our new Deeper Walk Joy Center in Hobart, Indiana, is giving us new opportunities for gathering in person. And this summer, we have several in-person intensives happening, and we're very excited about that. So I'm going to just tell you a quick headline of what you could go find more information about if you are interested. So we've got Dan and Sarah Allison are going to be leading people through spiritual warfare tools and training. Melissa Finger will be leading an intensive on what every people helper needs to know about complex trauma. Dawn Whitestone will be hosting two things: a weekend of prayer for our children and a prayer ministry graduation and reunion. So we've got lots going on, especially if you are in or are interested in the School of Ministry. And for more information, I'm going to direct you to check out dwisom.org. dwisom.org. Fun times.
Some. Yeah. No, there's a lot going on. And you know, one thing that I'm excited about that is I'm not teaching any of it, and it's all good stuff.
Yeah, and I'm going to tell you why you're not going to be not only not teaching any of it, but next announcement is Father is going on sabbatical.
Yeah.
Your first sabbatical ever in ministry, right?
Yeah, practice retirement. I don't know what that means. I'm going to be gone for 3 months. Doing non-Deeper Walk things. So this will be the first time ever.
Blessings on you. I'm so excited for you and for Mom. So we're just, for the podcast to know, we are going to wrap up this series for you so we don't leave you on a cliffhanger. And then the podcast will be going into sabbatical mode, and I'll explain more about what that means the closer we get to it. So you will be technically out in May, but the podcast, this series will go through May. So yes, just for your heads up, all you who are with us on the trail, and blessings to you, Father.
Yeah. Well, we're looking forward to it. It's going to be nice to finally do something like this after a long time. And I'm hoping, you know, the goal is to go kind of get renewed, recharged, and come back and have another strong 10 years after this. You know, that'll push me into my 70s. And so I'm looking forward to it, because there's just a lot of exciting things going on these days. And I think God's got a special calling on this ministry. And I think that it's really exciting to me. I remember not that long ago just praying that God would give us a team. And now I look at our team and I'm like, this is an amazing team. And I'm just really delighted, you know, I can go off and do something like this and not have to actually worry at all because we've got such good people.
Huzzah.
Yeah.
Thank you, Lord. All right. Well, on that note, any final thoughts for this episode on giants?
Let's talk about Nephilim. No, I'm just yeah, no. So the idea of, I'm sorry, the idea of giants. Yeah, I do think though it just represents. It's always been this metaphor for things that scare us, right? Because we can't see any way to win this. And all of us, I think, have had things like this in our lives, you know, whether it's a battle with anxiety, a battle with depression, a battle with addiction, whether it's, you know, just a common sin I fall into over and over again. I can't understand why I can't get on the other side of this. A giant could be my fear of what I see happening in culture, my fear of what I see happening someplace else. It just represents big, right? Big, scary, and it's easy to say, oh, just trust God, right? Just let go and let God kind of thing. Let's just trust him. Everything will be fine. That is actually where we want to get, but it doesn't mean we can just choose it and all of a sudden everything's fine. That's the point of breakthroughs, is breakthroughs actually are, every time that we have a breakthrough, we grow a little bit in our ability to trust. And so what we're doing is we're overcoming something that is keeping me from trusting right now. And so that's what we're really looking for in our breakthroughs, is what is it that, where do I need a breakthrough in my life that will help me to trust God more than I do? And with this particular thing, because sometimes I trust him a lot in one area, but I get stuck trusting him with this. And that thing that you struggle trusting God for, that's your giant that needs to be defeated.
All right. Onward until next week. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us on the trail today. Did you like this episode? Would you like more people to see it? This is the part where I ask you to like, comment, subscribe, share with a friend. And hey, do you love this channel? One of the best ways that you can support us is by becoming a Deeper Walk Trailblazer. Thanks again. We'll see you back on the trail next week.